Welcome to City Talks, a monthly podcast looking at the big issues facing UK cities and the latest thinking on urban policy. I'm your host, Andrew Carter, from the think tank Centre for Cities. I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to City Minutes. I'm Andrew Carter, and today I'm joined by my colleague, Paul Swinney. And we're going to be talking about the government's Levelling Up white paper, which finally launched yesterday on Wednesday, the 2nd of February. After 2 years and lots of speculation, was the wait worth it? In some respects, the expectations were so high that they were never going to be met. That said, I think there's quite a bit in there that gives us encouragement for the future. Just in terms of numbers, for those that haven't read it yet, the white paper is 332 pages long when you exclude the technical annex. It's got four chapters. It talks about six capitals as the drivers of growth: physical, human, intangible, financial, social, and institutional. It's organized around five pillars that underpin the system change that the white paper sets out will be needed to make Levelling Up happen. It's got 12 missions, which are organized by four objectives, crudely around productivity, public services, pride, and power. There are 49 metrics to measure the progress, and the white paper gives itself 8 years to deliver, with many of those missions going out to 2030. So that's the nuts and bolts of the white paper. So the question, I suppose, to start with, Paul, get your reflections on it, is what do we know now about how the government thinks about Levelling Up that we didn't know, say, 24 or 48 hours ago? How should we think about now what they think about Levelling Up?
I was fully expecting you there, Andrew, to finish off with a partridge in a pear tree. There were so many numbers that you were listing out there. I guess the first question for me when reading it was, do we now know what Levelling Up actually is? You know, we've waited, as you were saying, over 2 years to actually bring a definition to this slogan. And if the paper's going to do anything, or the white paper approach is going to do anything, it first needs to actually define its terms. What does it mean? And reading between the lines and doing a lot of distilling, which we have done over the last sort of 12 to 18 hours, it seems to amount to two things. The first is about improving productivity across the country, which is about getting places to reach their productivity potential rather than trying to make everywhere the same. And that's a really, really crucial point that Centre for Cities has been pushing for the last year or so. So you're trying to improve the performance of Manchester is a really big challenge, because not only is it far from its potential, but it's a really big place. And so it has very large implications for the national economy because its underperformance does. And then the second element is about trying to improve living standards. And that's about improving your living standards irrespective of geography. So there's no reason why, you know, a place like Barrow should be have low life expectancy and high levels of people with very few formal qualifications, where, say, I don't know, a place like St Albans, the opposite is the case. And if you look through the missions, you can, yes, there were 12 of them, but you can broadly group them into those two categories. And I think if we're being kind, having that sort of focus to the Levelling Up agenda actually is very, very helpful.
So that's definitely a step on, in the sense, because one of the big criticisms and one of the concerns, worries that we had amongst many others was that essentially Levelling Up essentially meant everything to everybody, and so there was no progress. So I think I agree with you in a sense that focus, when you get under the skin of it on this productivity potential idea and standards of living, I think at least gives us a framework to move forward. The other concern that we had, you know, in terms of the overall approach of the Levelling Up white paper, was about, you know, where cities would fit in all of this. And, you know, our concern, I think, was that cities would either be ignored or severely kind of underplayed in their significance to driving the Levelling Up agenda. And in chapter one, which is all about the analysis, setting out the problem, and it's nearly 100 pages long, and it talks about various aspects and comes at it from different ways. Actually, cities appear quite prominent in many respects. And in particular, because I know you've written on this, it'd be good to get your further thoughts on it. Notions and references to the Medici effect, or the Medici model, going back to Renaissance Florence, a feature very early in the report and come up several times as a sort of symbol of the way that the government was, at least in the analysis, trying to think about it. Just say a little, because you've written about this, just say a little bit more about how you understand the Medici model and connect it to, you know, to the city's perspective.
Yeah, so this was actually very interesting. And I mean, there have been a number of people that have criticised both the references to the Medici effect and then sort of the slightly bizarre history of cities that was given at the very start, which I'll come on to in a second. But the Medici effect actually is very interesting because of what it tells us about the direction of travel. And I think this is probably an element where the paper isn't explicit enough in terms of then following through its earlier analysis. But basically, the Medici effect is saying if you bring lots of clever people together with your different elements of capital, as they call it, so you know, high skills, money, et cetera, and you bring them together in one place, that's the crucial element. You've got to bring these people together to interact with one another from different disciplines. Then innovation and invention occurs as a result of that. Well, the crucial element is that, you know, it's bringing together these different things in a particular location. That's the important bit that we mustn't forget. And that's basically then when, so then they're talking about the Medici effect. They're talking about cities in general in the UK, but actually the biggest cities in particular. You know, London has gone through its own Medici effect since the early 1980s, you know, declines for many decades before then an incredible bounce back with a whole array of different industries growing and sort of intersection between those industries too, sort of pushing on London's growth even further. And it's exactly that Medici effect we do need in other big cities. So in talking about the Medici effect, we're not talking about, you know, an individual cluster of one sector, which has been a real sort of favourite of economic development policy in the past. We're actually talking about, huge growth in the rural economy. We are talking about growth, or trying to encourage and foster the growth of big cities by bringing lots of different people together and bringing capital and other inputs into the economy together into one place to try and push on the performance of regional and national economies. So that is great. But of course, you know, when it's sort of veiled in the terms of the Medici effect and the progress of the Roman Empire, it then means that people like Labour's response focus on that element of it rather than perhaps the underlying justification for it. Now, I think the issue where the white paper sort of runs into problems is, as you've already said, Andrew, chapter one is 100 pages long. So you get this stuff at the start where you can sort of feel there's a narrative starting to build, but then it falls down as you go through the chapter. Not only because it's too long. I mean, you would never get away with that scent of a cities, isn't that right?
Absolutely not.
But it then sort of starts to get a bit confused by then talking about local authorities and by talking about regions. You've got all these mixes of geography rather than trying to keep to a consistent definition of urban and rural. And that's where I think there's going to be a lot of confusion comes in, and there's still a lot of work and clarification that is required.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. So there's, you know, if you look at chapter one, which is all about the analysis, I think there are good bits in it and there are some less good bits in it, but it definitely feels the further you get, it becomes more and more incoherent in terms of following through on threads and themes. And I think that, as you say, sort of set it up. So if chapter one sets out the analysis, chapter two and chapter three then are really about, so what are we going to do about this? You know, we've identified these problems, however described. Here's our sort of policy prescription, policy menu. And it talks about these kind of systems change using these five pillars, and it talks about these 12 missions under these four objectives. I mean, it's difficult to sort of summarize all of that. I mean, there's good stuff in it, and there's, you know, obviously there's some stuff that is probably less good. Still feels to me like there's a disconnect between the analytical piece and the policy piece. And I suppose, again, our worry was that all the policy, or much of the policy, would be cosmetic, short-term, you know, kind of dealing with kind of fairly side issues rather than focusing on the fundamentals. But there's more to it than that, right? There were things about skills, and there were things about transport, there were things about innovation, there were things about devolution, which we know are substantive things that we need to kind of get right if we want level enough to have a reasonable chance in the future. Your thoughts on that, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, the intentions of the white paper, I think, are really good. And if you can sort of, you know, you sort of have to wade through it a little bit and sort of filter out what exactly those intentions are. But there's a lot to be encouraged about from the scene setting and the mood music that has tried to be put around it. So we've touched on the economic geography point already about, you know, different places playing different roles and recognising that and tailoring policy to deal with that. But then there's three other encouraging points too. The first is that there is a discussion around how Whitehall needs to change in terms of government departments need to think much more spatially in their approach. And there are a number of ideas put in there about how that might come about. Now, I don't think that's any mean feat in order to make it happen. And maybe it's just impossible given the way the government machine is set up. But at least there are efforts to try and change the incentives that Whitehall departments face to operate perhaps more thinking more in a spatial way rather than sort of in a linear way that they may well think currently and have done in the past. The stuff around devolution is really, really interesting. You know, we were promised a devolution framework when the government was elected. Some of us will remember that actually this was meant to be a English devolution white paper, which then turned into a levelling up white paper. And so that there's still a lot of detail in there is great. And the emphasis, again, is very much on local government reorganisation and incentivises that. And that's the key thing. There's a menu of options there to encourage, hopefully, local government to take economically the right choices to try and get a reorganisation of local government to create institutions that can then drive on growth within there or support the growth of their areas. And then there's a discussion around data too, which is, you know, how can we get better data? And this is something that Centre for Cities has campaigned for a long time. We have seen some progress in this area. It's allowed us to do deeper analysis of what's going on across the country, but clearly there are still very large gaps. And I think what has come out in the white paper is that in the process of trying to write it, people like Andy Haldane, who are used to using pretty good data at the national or international level, have then run up against some pretty serious challenges.
What do you mean we haven't got any data that's, you know, that's got less than 24 months lag? What do you mean? How can I do my job? Yeah. Welcome to the world of local economic development.
Yes, well, welcome to the pain that we feel on a daily basis. So that is really good too. You know, if there are moves afoot to try and improve data, then, you know, maybe come 2030, we can actually assess some of these things to much finer grain detail and crucially then give better policy prescriptions as a result. So that's all really promising, those four big things. So economic geography, Whitehall refocus, devolution and data. I think where this disconnect comes in, as you were talking about, Andrew, is then about the action behind it. And I think this is where probably the white paper does start to disappoint, because a lot of the intentions aren't matched up with policy action. So there were a lot of policies in there. A lot of them have been announced before. I'm fairly relaxed about that. We don't need new ideas. We just need implementation of something rather than announcements of them. I don't think we should expect there's a big bang of new policies, because just because something's been announced before doesn't mean that it isn't relevant for the levelling up white paper. So the city regional sustainable transport settlements, for example, spending money on transport infrastructure in big cities, that is a levelling up policy. Just because it got announced earlier doesn't mean that it now gets thrown in the bin. That would be ridiculous. So that's all very good. But I think there are two big challenges. Now, the first is the long-term nature of it. So if we're being kind, it goes beyond the next election, which was a fear that levelling up would only be about the next election, because it's about getting votes of voters in certain parts of the country. So if we go beyond that, that's great. There are things in there for the next election. Politically, that makes sense. But the target is 2030. So happy days beyond 2024, 2025. The issue is that 2030 is only 8 years away. And we're talking about a problem which is at least 100 years in the making. We're talking about a policy approach that has been going for at least 90 years to try and solve it. And if we are able to level up the country by 2030, I'll get levelling up tattooed on my arm. It's just they've set themselves too big a task. And I think in doing that, there's a worry about, you know, you're not going to achieve it by 2030, but actually you're not even setting the direction of travel. Because even if we'd said 2040, which would have been just under 20 years, which is what the Germans did when they were bringing West back with East, at least it gives you that longer term mentality. And I don't think the white paper really sets that out. And then from a funding perspective, I think there's an even greater challenge. So the Chancellor's been pretty strident that he's not going to give any money out before 2025, because he's already set his spending review. Okay, fair enough. But the levelling up agenda should go well beyond the current spending review. But there wasn't even really any signposting as to what funding might look like post 2025. Now, here, I think there's a pretty big challenge for the levelling up agenda, because reading between the lines, what it says is that the Treasury isn't behind levelling up. And if the Treasury isn't behind levelling up, that doesn't look good in terms of the longevity. So when you then come into questions about you know, not just changes of government, but maybe even changes of leadership. Same government, different leader. What happens to the agenda? Does it then disappear? Which is something I think Michael Gove has been very keen to try and avoid, and they've put measures in place to try and sidestep that. But without the Treasury support, it's just the longevity of it is questionable.
Yeah, no, I think those are excellent points. I mean, just to add my two penneth in, you know, I think as you said, I was heartened by a recognition that levelling up is a reform agenda as much as it is a funding agenda. As you said, we can't get away from levelling up is going to cost a lot of money. You know, it's cost 2 trillion euros in Germany, and we are still counting, and they are still going 30 years after they started. So it's not like you're not doing this on the cheap. But if you wanted to have the impact that we wanted to have, and you wanted to last, it needs to be accompanied with a reform agenda. And a part of that is about reforming institutions at the national level, the way that central government operates, and at the local level. People forget that was part of the agenda in the German program as well, reform and the institutions of the East so that they were better placed to make the most of the money and the investment that was then being given to them. So I completely agree. I think that kind of reform agenda is really, really important. And obviously, understandably, we talk a lot about money and the money side, the funding side. I think that's understandable, but reform and institutions really, really critical. So that's my one point. My second observation on the funding front, we saw this yesterday in the run-up to the election, you know, a lot of emphasis on these kind of pots of money, you know, the high streets fund, the town centre fund, the levelling up fund, these kind of small funds, were they going up, were they going down, were they sufficient? And obviously, again, those are important. And, you know, it does appear that there is less money than there was 5 years ago when you kind of narrowly define it like that. Or when you go back to the RDAs, which we've done some work on, you know, you see that from what the RDAs were spending to what the local growth was spending under the coalition and what we're spending now, there is definitely a decline. So they're important and we shouldn't lose sight of them. But we do, when we think about funding, and again, this is the German experience tells us this, you have to think about the totality of money that the state is spending in any place. And that is looking at education and health, and as well as issues around transport and innovation. So it's trying to take it all in the round, which is more difficult because the numbers are not always there for us to easily understand that. But I think we do have to get there. And that really connects to my first point, which is the reform agenda, Hoole government approach, Hoole place approach. People remember those sorts of things back in the noughties, you know, kind of thinking about how we can allocate the full range of funding that is going on in these areas, not just focus on these relatively small scale, as they always will be, special pots of money as well. So I think those would be my two additional thoughts to yours, Paul. Yeah, Paul.
And I think on that, to give a bit of flavour about what you're talking about there too, if we look at skills, we've said that if levelling up did nothing else, it should do something about skills, because that is the driver of why we see disparities across the country. Now, there may be some people within government listening to this and saying, well, you've been a little bit unfair here, because actually we've said, you know, even just in the area of skills, we've said a number of different things that are, that will make a difference. And there are some very interesting things, both in the white paper and indeed things that have been announced in spending reviews and budgets. But coming to your point about, you know, individual pots of money, what we called for is an increase in spending on skills from 5% to 7% of GDP. That's the scale of things that we should be talking about. And I think a lot of the comment over the last couple of days has got wrapped up in conversations about, oh, well, you know, they were spending 2.1 billion a year on local growth, and now it's gone down to 1.6 billion. So, okay, yeah, that's a valid point. We have seen, you know, these fluctuations in these small pots, but we should be thinking much, much bigger than this. You know, what we really would have liked to have seen is, I think, a couple of announcements around some quite fundamental shifts in spending, rather than, I think, just discussions around smaller pots of money, and giving us a much better understanding, being much clearer about that totality of spending that you're talking about, Andrew. So we're not then drawn into conversations about 2.1 billion v 1.6 billion. We're talking about, you know, here's a programme of work which is 500 billion pounds or £1 trillion or whatever it is that the numbers actually put on. And I think it's that lack of direction, which can only really be given from Treasury steer, that this agenda is really missing.
Yeah, no, quite. And it reminds us that, you know, the local government financial settlement is as important to levelling up as what is in the levelling up. And the cost of living squeeze that's going to squeeze people across the country, disposable income, less money to spend on the high streets is going to have a big effect on levelling up, at least in the short term. Neither of those things in the white paper, but they still affect levelling up nevertheless. Okay, let's kind of conclude, Paul. Let's kind of bring it together. I suppose the big question is, you know, and again, my view is, notwithstanding, you know, that it maybe, you know, it didn't meet the expectations. It never was. It never would really be given, you know, how long we'd waited and what had been loaded onto it. But I'm still of the view that we're better with the levelling up white paper than without it. A government commitment to dealing with geographical inequality or variation across place, I think, is always a good thing. And you know, they've held to that agenda. They haven't been pushed off it by other things. So for me, that means we're in a better place than we would be without it, even if it's not perfect. And then I think the point I want, you touched on it in your delivery and timescales issue. My thought is, as you say, you know, if levelling up is a long-term thing, which it invariably is, that does raise some questions about not only how does the government not get distracted by other things and commits to and continues to commit to levelling up, but what that means for future governments of whatever persuasion, and trying to get them to at least accept the principle of levelling up, even if they, you know, whoever is in power, you know, they have discussions and amendments around the detail, but not to scrap the levelling up ambition and intention for something else, and therefore we just lurch from, you know, from 3 or 4 years to 3 or 4 years. So that would be my kind of broader, I suppose, reflections about how it all sits. But your final thoughts, Paul?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think it's, in principle, it provides a good guide for policy in the future, although I think it probably wasn't articulated as explicitly as what it could be. So there's a question about whether everybody gets the message. But there is a big question about, as you say, will it even survive a change in leader, never mind a change in government? And certainly Labour hasn't come out in great support, although it hasn't actually, I think I would contend, probably engaged with some of the bigger challenges. I think some of the criticism so far has been fairly superficial. I think the bigger issue, though, is that the Treasury hasn't implicitly come out in support. And without that, what does that then mean for the future?
Yes, having a mind of what the Treasury thinks is always a good place to start and indeed to finish. Thank you very much, Paul. We couldn't do justice to, as I said, the 332 pages, less than 24 hours when it's been published, but there'll be loads more on our website over the next week and beyond in terms of what the Levelling Up white paper means and, you know, how do we take it forward particularly. Thank you very much for listening and see you soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of City Talks, brought to you by Centre for Cities. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher by searching Centre for Cities. Please rate, review and subscribe if you liked what you heard. You can also follow the Centre on Twitter at Centre for Cities, or like us on LinkedIn for the latest updates on what the Centre is up to. If you have any comments on the episode or suggestions for topics we should cover in the future, we'd love to hear from you. Do tweet us or send an email to info@centreforcities.org. The music was from Palace Fires by Johnny Foreigner, used with permission, and all rights are reserved.